The following program, Flame On, is presented by the Nerdy Show Network, geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by A Comic Shop, Orlando's number one comic and nerd destination, where you can see me probably crying in a corner, and with generous support from listeners like you. To learn how you can support other fine geeky programming, visit nerdyshow.com.
Welcome to Flame On. This is our microsode deep dive into the Netflix series Luke Cage.
Deep dive.
My name is Pat. I'm going to be facilitating this conversation.
Is that because Brian's wasted?
A little bit.
I'm not wasted.
We're getting wrecked, son.
You've never seen me wrecked.
No,
this is wrecked.
I bet a bunch of those people at that conference you went to saw you get wrecked. In that fling.
Oh my.
What? I didn't go to Frolicon.
Anywho.
It wasn't a sling. It was like a sushi table.
Back on track, boys. So I am Pat. I'm your talking bearskin rug and producer of Flame On. And I am here with Brian.
Hello.
Oral.
That's me.
And BJ.
Hi.
Marvel released their third Netflix series. We've had Daredevil. We've had Jessica Jones, and now Luke Cage. Not saying this is the third season, it's the third series. Because Daredevil had two seasons, and now we're getting ready to go into Iron Fist and the Defenders after this. This is the story of how my life got flipped, turned upside down. Oh, this is the story of Luke Cage, who was introduced to Jessica Jones. He went to prison, was experimented on, and came out nigh invulnerable as Power Man. And we get his backstory here, because in his introduction to Jessica Jones, he's already established himself in his world and with what he is doing in life. So, Oral, we'll start with you.
Is it because I'm black?
Yep.
Exactly. Yes. Damn straight.
What did you think of the show and its mark in pop culture in 2016?
I think it left an indelible mark on pop culture. It was something that everyone was talking about, whether you specifically like watch the Marvel Netflix series. I think that Jessica Jones was my favorite up until this point, because there's so much of Luke Cage that resonates with me, not just because, you know, it's black. It's like, and I'm not like a hip hop person, but like I do love like jazz. I do love that sort of like cotton club feel. And that's, you know, a lot of Luke Cage took place out of Harlem's Paradise, this club that gives you new cotton feel, cotton club feel. It was gorgeous. It was great to see people who look like me everywhere. My favorite thing was people saying, well, you know, it feels like it's just, you know, going out of its way to be like, just only talk to, you know, the African-American community. Somebody told me that. And I'm like, it takes place in Harlem.
That was the nicest way that it was described by most people, because it did receive, quote unquote, Twitter backlash that it was too black. And
in Harlem.
In Harlem. Mm-hmm. In Harlem of all places. But that definitely was a huge thing. And it did speak a lot through music. Mm-hmm. Music set the tone through the entire show from the beginning all the way through to the end.
I don't listen to soundtracks that often, but I listen to the Luke Cage soundtrack all the time. Like, it's just, it speaks to me on multiple levels. I thought it worked incredibly well with the series, the cinematography, there. Like, there's just so many people who contributed to it. It just it makes sense, giving you that sort of like 70s exploitation feel, but doing it in this really smart and modern way. Because I wrote a review about Jenny Tartakovsky's Cage, which takes place in 1970s New York.
Yeah.
And it gives you exploitation, but it feels uncomfortable because, you know, it's sort of this like mush mouth, oh please never throw me into that briar patch sort of feel. Which, you know, like, go for it because that's what you want to do, but you can do exploitation in a smart way, and that's what Luke Cage does in spades. And it still it harkens back to this like sort of real, you know, mass incarceration, running from your past when you've been wrongfully convicted, but knowing that you still have sins to atone for. The whole like background where like his father was a preacher and they didn't get along, and like all of that works for me completely. Especially that final battle. Like, I've seen that. I lived in New York for summers, you know, visiting family. I've seen that. Kick his ass, Luke. Like, I lost it there.
Yeah, it definitely rings true. And was blaxploitation used, basically turned on its head and used to put out a positive message at the core of it versus doing it to kind of appease the white community, in a sense?
It's one of those things where it's there's a thin line between homage and parody.
Yeah.
And they so many times I see it done where it's like, all right, you can move a little bit back to the right side of this line. You can dip a little bit, but I need you to move. And they spend the whole time, and it, like, even I think one of the things I liked the most about it was the black literature references were like everywhere.
Absolutely.
That, and like, they don't shy away from what's going on like in current society where like black people or just brown people in general are being gunned down in the streets, but it's okay because they're cops, because Black Lives Matter is a quote unquote like antagonistic violent movement. And sometimes movements have to be violent. Mm-hmm. Oh, and you know what? Shout out to them showing Spanish Harlem, because Spanish Harlem is a part of Harlem too, god damn it.
That is very true. Brian, what was your take on...
You've done so well in the past couple of months, Brian. Don't fuck this up for us.
I like the music.
Uh-huh.
Seriously, though, this is Luke Cage's Superman. And that is important, because I realize that with my privilege, Superman to me has always been very self-identifying, like, oh, he's a white guy, he's Superman, all great. This is Luke Cage. Luke Cage is Superman. Like, I never appreciated what that means until I saw it. And then culturally, musically, being in that community, like, not only am I not, that's not my thing, that's not my normal thing, but I really, really, really enjoyed it. And I felt like this is cool. This is interesting. This is a very valid thing in this community. And I'm so happy this exists. I'm thrilled that Marvel made this their fourth
produced season of Netflix television, third series.
For Luke Cage, a character that I never really identified with, somewhat obviously, but I never really thought that much of as an important thing. And now I really get it. And I really understand it. And I thought by the end of the series, I'm like, this is huge. This is important. This is good. This is earned. This is the Method Man scene in the little
bodega.
The bodega. That was huge. And people are like, oh, that's just one of those things. No, that's important. That's a cultural recognition thing there, right there. And that was really cool. We watched this whole, most of this series, Pat and I watched in New York and Long Island, right before New York Comic Con and a little bit after. And like, this was like, it was really cool for me to be in that vicinity of Harlem. And I even said, I'm like, oh my God, I want to go to Harlem. I want to go to these places. I want to see this. Like, this is so cool that it's like located in this area that we're near. And then this is a huge cultural touchstone for the Marvel Universe, for people. Like, this is, I was so in love with that idea. The only things that I didn't love. Well,
before we get into the negatives, let's continue on with the story and the gripping nature of it within a culture that needs it right now. Mm-hmm. I think a huge part of why this was extremely positive was you're taking a character created in the 70s that was this caricature, this exploitive look mm-hmm. at Black culture, you know, with his fro and his big puffy collar, open shirt, mm-hmm. and his, you know,
the headband,
the tiara.
It really was a tiara. And you're finally taking him and you are humanizing him into an actual real person, as opposed to this stereotypical caricature. BJ, what was your takeaway from the show?
So this show didn't just hit me where it hurts. It like sent a train through it. It like, get a little personal. My dad's a preacher and he was not always the most reputable person. So that like, there was that part of the storyline that just really hit home. More than Luke Cage, Cottonmouth.
Really?
Mahershala. Ali.
Oh my gosh. Cottonmouth.
I'm sorry if I butchered that.
I'm glad you said it because I probably would have done it worse.
I practiced it in like front of a mirror for like 4 or 5
And he was in Moonlight recently, right?
Yeah. Which I haven't seen yet and I want to.
I heard good things about it.
The whole idea of there was like that whole idea of not just because a lot of the Netflix series kind of concentrate on like organized crime and everything, but the idea of family and how you have family, especially in the Black community, for a lot of people, family, there is just this idea that you are doing this when you grow up. I don't care if you're like amazing at writing music. I don't care if you're good at sports. I don't care about no. You will take over the family business. You will do this thing, even if deep down you don't want to do it and you self-sabotage yourself. And like that just went straight home with me with Cottonmouth and Mariah and just kind of their whole.
Played by Alfre Woodard.
Yep. Loved her. Yeah, that whole idea of like you have a responsibility to the community, you have a responsibility to family, and I don't care if it's ugly, I don't care if it's beautiful, you will have this obligation, and that really grabbed me so tight that I'm like, I am finishing this at work on the treadmill, I am going to finish this at the stoplight, I have to watch this whole thing play out. And I loved it, and it really grabbed me in a way that I did not expect.
Yeah, it definitely reached into different aspects that other series have not been able to touch on, which was great, which is what was needed.
Perfect.
So obviously our main character is Luke Cage, and then your main antagonist at the start of the series is Cottonmouth, and you see the tenuous relationship between him and his cousin Mariah, because his dealings aren't always on the up and up, and she is a city councilwoman and has dealings with him, one because they're family, and two because her end games aren't always the same as what her political goals have to be. And it shows that bond between them as family. And as you were saying, that this is what their goal was going to be no matter what. This is what they were basically predestined by their family to become.
Like they were raised to do it, whether they hated it or not. You got the feeling both of them absolutely hated these roles that they were just thrown into, to the point where she's just screaming at a photo of the woman that raised her. And you're just like.
But that's the stuff that I love it. because, like, my family is a matriarchal family.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, black women, older black women have an incredible amount of power in those dynamics. And seeing her, you know, we've seen that character before, like in The Get Down with Bad Annie.
Yep.
Like, the same thing. You run numbers. That scene where she's, you know, talking to Cornell and Mariah and
other uncle.
Their uncle.
Oh. Joseph?
I think so. You know, he's like, hey, take him downstairs. Do what you need to do. And, you know, keep it down. I got white folks in the other room. Like,
and I can't have them scared.
Yeah, I can't scare off the white folks in the other room. I lost it because that's the sort of mentality. And not in that, like, exact instance, but knowing that sort of culture and being a part of that culture where, you know, nothing's perfect, but, you know, family comes first and there's no way you can turn away from them. Because mm-hmm. that's how you're conditioned. But that's how you survive.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Like, it's not that they're mad because they have to do it. They're mad because they know if they don't stand together, everyone else is going to tear them apart. Mm-hmm. And seeing, you know, Mariah, who is my favorite, like, villain that we've seen in the Netflix Marvel series, seeing her develop a this sort of weird rapport with Shades, who is so dreamy.
Oh, that's
Adjus.
Oh, that's Theo Rossi.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right there with you.
And he is one of your major supporting characters, verging on main character. He has a very interesting dynamic because he plays support, but has such a presence that he is a major player throughout the course of the series.
Mm-hmm. Well, and also he's also the only link. He's one of like two links to, well, three, to Luke Cage's past.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's, there's those characters involved that connect his past, that connect the characters together.
Mm-hmm. Which, because gives you that human element.
Exactly.
Squabbles. Oh, squabbles.
Oh.
You're like that uncle that everybody had where we found out we weren't really related. Your parents grew up together and that's your uncle.
I had so many of them.
Oh. I'm West Indian. Everybody's your auntie and uncle.
Right. Mm. I'm Puerto Rican. It's the same with us.
Aunt Pat. Aunt Pat. I've known Aunt Pat all my life. I'm just like, I remember one day, Mom, y'all not related. Candace ain't your real cousin, but y'all cousins. I'm like, yes, ma'am.
And then... And then it's funny because, like, since I identify with Cottonmouth so much, when, like, Diamondback literally just kind of exploded into there and was just like, hey, what's up? You know, because my father's a preacher and my father has fucked up royally more than a couple times. Like, that whole look of you have Luke Cage, who legit tries to do the right thing, but at the same time, he's just like, I want to just be left alone at the start of the series. Actually, when you meet him in Jessica Jones, and then you have Diamondback, who is just like off the rails, and I'm just like, "Yep, that's the other way I could have gone."
I mean, this is the only thing about Diamondback. When he was introduced in the show, I was like, "Wait, is this like a small thing? Is this a big thing?" Because they didn't call him Diamondback; he wasn't Diamondback yet.
Yep.
And you didn't realize until, like, the end of, like, the second episode that he was there. You're like, oh, he's that guy. Like, he's this thing. Like, I didn't appreciate that. That didn't relate to me. But it was also, it was interesting. Like, I like that he comes out of the Luke Cage sort of tapestry organically. Like, it's not, like, a thing from outside. It's his own problem. It's his own family. It's that thing.
It's the other side of that. It's
the
other side of that pendulum.
No, absolutely. And that was interesting. But I don't know that when they were introduced to him that was clear. And it doesn't have to be. Yeah. But it was certainly kind of out of like, whoa, who's this guy?
They bring in Diamondback about 2/3 of the way into the season. He's mentioned because Shades works for him. Yep. He's Shades' boss. And he is mentioned by name early on, first episode, I believe, when Shades goes to Cottonmouth.
About the arms deal.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And it was a very interesting way for them to go with it. So we're not going to sit here and rehash every episode, obviously. But Luke's arc starts with him being the reluctant hero of the series. He pops, who he works for, knows about his abilities and his gifts, and he doesn't want to put himself out there. He doesn't want the world to know. He doesn't want it to be a thing until it becomes a thing.
Mm-hmm.
So he gets to a point where he realizes that he has to make this change to protect the people that he cares about, that there isn't a choice.
Mm-hmm.
And a huge moment of that is at Pop's barbershop when the shop is attacked and they shoot the place up. And the bullet ricochets off of him and ends up killing Pop. And he then has to make that decision of, do I just crawl into a hole or do I take it to the street and be this person that the world needs?
And what's interesting is that you have Misty Knight, who I loved in this series, where... You know, she's doing the best she can and she's this, you know, great cop and she's trying to clean up the streets, but she knows, you know, sometimes her hands are tied and she has this understanding of what is right and what is wrong, and she's not wrong. And that's what I like about it. She takes the information that she has available and she follows her moral compass. And even though we're rooting for Luke, we should be rooting for Misty too, because she's out there in these streets. She grew up, you know, in this area. She could have left and she stayed because she knows the only way things are gonna get better is if I try to do something.
Yep. That was one of the things that like half broke my heart, but half because she's like, it seems like at the later half of the season she is getting like sent through the ringer.
Yeah.
Because she is like, I will do the right thing. And then, you know, she's got peers that are like, you don't quite have to do the right thing that much. And she's like, no. And then you've got the whole thing with you're rooting for Luke, but she's like, but he's breaking the law. I have to bring him in. And it's that whole thing where she has complete faith in the system. And then when her partner ends up being dirty, that only... And the sad thing is you get the feeling her partner didn't dislike her. He didn't disagree with her. And like that was the saddest thing is his final act essentially screwed her over royally.
Of course.
And it didn't. And then all that time she spent being part of the system, doing what's right, being good at her job, all became a liability.
It doesn't mean anything when the system is stacked against you.
Yep.
Exactly.
Like, and that's what's so great is that, you know, we need a complete overhaul of the system. And that's what Misty represents when she comes to those roadblocks and those impasses. She's like, we got to do something to change this. And Luke is out here just like, don't trust y'all. I have good reason not to trust y'all. I ain't doing it. And both are valid points.
Mm-hmm.
And when you can look at it and say, you know, if I have been victimized, if I have been, you know, wrongfully like harmed, I would call the police. That's what you're supposed to do. But you also know that calling police is a double-edged sword sometimes. And it's just, it's not saying that all cops are bad. It's not saying that everyone who's out and does vigilante justice is great, because Luke makes some mistakes. And mm-hmm. because of those mistakes, people die. But, you know, it's, that's what I love about this series, is because nothing is cut and dry.
Yeah.
Except for people don't deserve to die on the streets.
Exactly. Yep. And there, it shows that moral ambiguity, that gray area of both sides. It doesn't mm-hmm. it doesn't vilify and it doesn't make one side or the other the be all and end all and the right way to do it.
Yeah.
One of the other things that we've talked about was the music of the show. The Method Man portion of it.
Bulletproof Love?
The Bulletproof Love set to the visuals of Luke Cage in a hoodie with bullet holes. It was a hugely impactful, complete visual in a world where you have to have a movement like Black Lives Matter, because there is so much fear and distrust, and neither side is wrong. The police aren't complete and utter just racist out to kill everyone. And not all black people are thieves and crooks and criminals that need to be, you know, shot on sight. It's a visual that I don't think the right people are going to see and are going to take away from it. And that's sad. But it's a hugely reaffirming visual for the people that see it, understand it, and support it. In addition to that, there were quite a few musical artists that appeared on the show as well.
Faith Evans?
Yep.
Girl, where you been? You fell off the map.
I thought it was hysterical because one of the things in Cottonmouth's office is the giant picture of Biggie.
Yeah.
Yep.
And when Faith Evans appeared singing in the club, I was like, wait a minute. That's like, wait, what? And it was a huge connection to that culture. And that Marvel timeline continuity is always so weird to deal with because it is that sliding time scale. And it's really hard to pinpoint like what a character would grow up with, because you still have Steve Rogers growing up in Nazi America, or, you know, Nazi Germany, depending on which book you're reading. But in this continuity, in this setting, you look at Cottonmouth, you look at Mariah, you look at these people when they would be growing up, that's huge. Biggie would have been a huge impact and influence on Cottonmouth. So to include somebody like Faith Evans is fantastic. But you also have Rafael Sadiq.
Oh, just tore it up.
I think all of the musicians they had in that every music scene in that club.
Charles Bradley was another one. Jidenna and Roman Gianarthur, the Delphonics and Adrian Young.
I lost it at the Delphonics.
Yep.
I'm like, oh shit. That's black royalty. You know, there is sometimes where you think that things are pandering to you, but none of this felt pandering. It is for something being like science fiction and fantasy, you know, having fantasy elements, it felt so intrinsically authentic. And I think that's what's really hard to come across. Like Daredevil is like fantastic in these elements, but I don't expect a moment that this law firm is failing,
right,
where Matt is literally living in this amazing law, you know, regardless of what's in front of the building. Like, it's just, it doesn't seem real. Jessica Jones kind of seems real to me because, you know, is this girl who's this woman who's an alcoholic. She's got all these demons. She's fighting through them. She's got PTSD. Like, you know, she's just grasping at some sort of like semblance of stability and Trish and Luke. But like Luke Cage through and through is like, yes, I see that. You know, people live in this building. Like, you know, I'm trying to, you know, work at night to go to school to make sure my family has a roof over their heads and like a better shot. You know, seeing Misty's initials on the basketball court is a thing. Pat, you know, you've been to those basketball courts.
Yep.
Not that one in particular, but like...
Well, I've been to that one.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I just...
No, that it grounds it so much in your own reality.
Mm-hmm.
more so than I think they've been able to. And that's one of the huge things, is as they keep doing these series, it'll be interesting to see with Iron Fist, see how they continue to do it. But they're really building and developing this really, really base, like, desire, like, that you I could be here. This is my world.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike the bigger MCU, that's very big,
grandiose, and
feels almost unreal, even though it's still earthly.
Yeah.
No, it doesn't feel like, oh, I'm just going to see Doctor Strange running down the street. I'm going to see the Avengers fighting aliens.
Flying through the air. Like, yeah.
But seeing, you know, but seeing how these people interact with the community and other people really, really drives that home. The last person I wanted to mention before we move on to another.
Is it Claire?
Well, yes. In the music aspect.
Oh, okay.
And honestly, it's kind of timely. Is Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings. Mm-hmm. They were the final performance in there, which I think, to me, was a great way to round out the musical performances in this club, and this the resurgence of Paradise and it coming
Paradise
back.
Paradise Lost.
Well, I mean, that, yeah, you had them, and then you had like Mariah's transition into the club and her putting up the new painting, taking down the Biggie painting and putting up the new one with the two kings. And it was masterfully done.
It really did hit home in such a profound way. And we just lost Sharon Jones, who just passed away, who battled through cancer to continue recording, to continue performing. She did not stop. This was not something that was going to be something that was going to hinder her life, and for her to record her parts, to be out and performing and creating this art was huge. And it's a huge loss to the musical community.
Go back and listen to her Terry Gross interview on Fresh Air in the last like 3-4 months. I mean, it was incredible, because she admitted, she's like, yeah, I'm going through chemo, I'm going through pancreatic cancer. And as soon as she said that, I'm like, oh my God, pancreatic cancer is so aggressive and such a challenge. And she was very alive and very admitting of her performance problems because of it. And she was, I was so sad recently when I knew she passed, because I'm like, oh my God, she's this huge fighter. And I love her music. I love her music. I was so glad that she was a part of this.
100% agree with that. So before we flipped the coin to the other side, let's talk about Claire, our last supporting character.
Oh, Night Nurse.
I was actually kind of impressed with her use in this series. She's been underutilized. I'm not a huge fan of Rosario Dawson. Mm-hmm. I don't love her.
Okay. I get that, yeah.
Really, it goes back to her playing Mimi and Rent in the movie. That's why I don't like her. But she, from her opening scene in this series, when she got purse snatched,
she's like,
and said, uh-uh, no ma'am, that's not how this is going to work. They found a way to elevate her.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. BJ, what were your thoughts on Night Nurse?
She was called Night Nurse. First of all, the thing happened. The thing happened, and I paused it, and I was like, finally, she has been known as Night Nurse. But the thing that really hit home with her character, because her characters, ever since she found Matt Murdock in that dumpster outside of her apartment, she's just been kind of like, she's been very responsive to things. Like, oh, look, this person's injured. Oh, look, I can't get into his skin. She's been very responsive. This actually, for the first time, her character is proactive, especially when she's talking to her mother. And her mother's like, what do you want to do? And she's like, this. I need to help these people.
It gave her dimension. It gave her a purpose.
Yes.
As opposed to just being, oh, somebody's hurt. These people don't have healing powers. Okay, fix them. And you're done. Bye. We'll see you when the next person gets hurt. It definitely fleshed her out as a three-dimensional character.
And she came in halfway through. Like, she came in right in the middle of this, I believe. They introduced her, like, almost in the middle of the season. And she was, like, she was pretty much there almost every episode.
Yeah, she definitely had a much more of a presence. And it brought her back to her roots because this is where she's from. And it shows that connection to Hell's Kitchen without Hell's Kitchen having to be center stage.
Yeah.
It's there, and it shows you, okay, well, these people can interact and be there and be close to each other without it having to be everything has to take place in Hell's Kitchen.
And it's that theme again of home. Mm-hmm. It's that theme again of your roots.
When I think of home.
it's you know, her family's from Harlem, and she's like, she lost her job. She's like, time to go home and reevaluate my shit. And, oh, hey, what's up? I remember when that girl you slept with shot you in the face with a shotgun. Like, you know, I love that. I love her adaptability as a character.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, from the moment she met Jessica, they do is she's like, wait, he's called Kilgrave? She's like, why don't they just call him Murder Corpse? And they both like, you know, she's like, Matt, you're kind of an asshole. Not gonna sleep with you anymore. And you know, just kind of like. So I'm super interested to see where her character's at when Iron Fist comes in, because mm-hmm. you know, that last 2 seconds, she's like, time for martial arts lessons if I'm gonna help these crazy ass superpower people. You know, and
which
I'm
was
like,
the only part that I felt a little corny. It was like, we got a shoehorn making sure she works into this series
as
well.
It wasn't her looking over encrypted files and figuring out, oh, you know what? Sea anemones. That's what it is. Sea anemones. we're gonna break down sea anemones. Like, it wasn't sea anemones, I know.
But still, yeah. She had that magical, like, that aha moment. This is what it is. This is what they based it off of.
And I did like when they finally kind of tipped that, you know, because they had about 2 moments of very sci-fi elements where they went into, like, the one bullet that can hurt him. And where they, you know, explain like how the bullet works against him.
Yeah.
And the whole thing where she's like, all right, guess we need to turn up the heat on this shit because it's not working. You know, that whole moment of her getting, like, them getting in contact with the guy that originally mm-hmm. ran the experiments.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. And then the whole thing with him popping up at the end, who's obviously going to turn Diamond back in the tombstone. So.
What? No.
Yeah.
No, Tombstone's a different character.
Oh. Yeah, no, I'm aware Tombstone's a different character, but I'm 90% sure they're going to make Diamondback Tombstone, seeing as the professor who wanted to do the same experiment, he wanted to replicate the experiment with Luke Cage, and Luke Cage, they destroyed his files.
Yeah, no, so, like, it'll make Diamondback, like, on par with Luke in some capacity.
Mm-hmm.
No, they're making it so, like, it's not just Judas Bullet.
Yeah.
It's like, here's an actual person who can stand up against him without this technology. But, like, I don't think he's turning him into Tombstone.
Well, we'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens. Brian,
what was bad about it? Nothing. Nope. Racism.
Wow.
So.
Pull through the card.
Hold on. Okay.
I'm trying to run this like goddamn pop culture happy hour. We're not just going to die. We're just not going to degrade into things. So, with all great art, there are some drawbacks, and there are some things that, in some cases, are fairly critiqued. Not like Twitter saying it's too black, because that's just ridiculous. I know that, Brian, you had some qualms with certain aspects, not of the story or the actors, but there were some things that you felt could have been improved.
Well,
what were those?
Honestly, I did love it. I really did. But the pacing, there were times where I was like, I wanted more of Cottonmouth, actually. I thought that arc could have been played out a lot longer. Because anytime you have a musician that is a villain or villainous.
Now the truth comes out.
I'm like, give me more. I want to see more of this. I don't want to see him just taken out by his sister. But the Cottonmouth thing, or the I'm sorry, Diamondback, the Diamondback character is where I felt like it was flawed. Not that I don't want to see like the story of Luke Cage and his half brother and all that. It's not that. I don't think they earned it. I think if they had introduced that flashback way at the beginning and built up to that, I could see that. I guess
or held it off to a second season.
Or a second season.
Because in that vein, I feel like Mariah should have been the big bad of the season.
No, she earned it, and she's not.
They pull focus away from her. She's still pulling strings, and she's still at the end of it. She is the one walking away
from all of it. Yeah,
I will use air quotes on victorious because she is still in a position of power at the end of the series. First season,
she gets off compared to the rest of the people,
but I think that they could have played up a lot more with Mariah. They could have done. They introduced Diamondback physically, and kind of rushed the story. My beef with the show came in the. I walk in this room and now I have a flashback of something I shouldn't know, but it will help move the story forward and explain to the audience why Diamondback hates me and make me understand why he hates me. It was like you stepped into a telepathy cube. I don't understand this.
The most earned conflict between Luke Cage and Diamondback was when they first met and they were in the theater. They were beating the shit out of each other.
Wow.
That was earned. That felt very, even though you didn't know who the hell this guy was, that felt very raw and like visceral. The scene at the end where they were fighting kind of more equal, and Diamondback had his suit and was more in his outfit according to the art, you know, all that. That didn't feel as earned. That didn't feel as much of a, even though it very much was a sense of parody because they had that same sort of superpower, I didn't feel that as much as I felt when they were in the theater. So, like, if you just find a way to introduce his identity earlier and you really build up to that, and Cottonmouth is still a big part of it because, again, I think he should be, and Black Mariah and all that, but you make it more earnest, you make it more a part of the core story, I buy into that a lot more. So, that's my problem.
And see, what I'm hearing actually is just you wanted more. Like, that's the thing. You want it, like, maybe an extra 5 episodes and, you know, introducing characters sooner. And boom. Honestly, with me, it was, I kind of just wanted more.
It's a fine-tuning thing. It's not a, is awful. No, I loved it. I was very engaged. I mean, Pat and I watched it in the basement of his parents' house. Like, because it was just so compelling, we kept watching it and watching it.
Where the ghost of all the boys he fooled around with watched you.
I can't speak to that.
There was only one boy I ever fooled around with in that house, and that was my first boyfriend.
Oh wow. So awkward. No,
we were not even in my old room. They didn't break that wall. No, did they?
Either way, it wasn't that. It was just, I really enjoyed it. I loved being in a culture that I am not familiar with, because that's what I want to know. I want to know other things. I don't want to just be in my same safe space in the theater doing my thing. I want to have a broader experience. And it was great. It was really, really cool. And the music and the acting and the culture, it was so important to me, because I've never appreciated Luke Cage, Power Man, as anything more than a 70s blaxploitation thing until now.
Because he wasn't anything else right. until now.
Absolutely. Even when Bendis made him the cornerstone of the new Avengers, which I loved and I really enjoyed, it wasn't about that. It was about his relationship with Jessica. And even in Alias, it was his relationship with Jessica. This was the first time I saw him. I actually saw him as what he is. He is a black Superman, and that's huge. That's so important. I never appreciated that until now. And I'm so glad Marvel did it that way. And I'm so glad it was good. Because if it had not been good, even though there was sort of that blaxploitation vibe at times, it would have been cheapened, but it wasn't. It was really, really, and you guys have proven it to me. It was really enjoyable, and I'm so glad it was as good as it was.
It made me super uncomfortable at times. And that is the only way to broaden your understanding of other people, other difficulties, mm-hmm. other cultures.
Exactly.
You know, for a show, for a company owned by another major company that is family friendly to the nth, millionth, nth degree, for them to use the N-word in a show like this, in a way that wasn't demeaning?
Or a way that wasn't nonchalant.
Yeah, that was... had a purpose, had a mm-hmm. reason, that you are showing this community and this culture and these real people.
And also having the flip side of that, it's like, I don't use that word.
Yeah.
That's not how you refer to me.
Yep. Exactly.
I'm that person. That's not how you refer to me.
Exactly. And if you are not a part of that community and you watch the show and you are not uncomfortable, then you're not taking it in. You're not accurately absorbing what you are watching. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what made it for me. Mm-hmm. That's what took it to that next level, was that this felt super, super real. And I think overall, it was the show that we needed in this.
It's a show that we still need as we enter the
Thunderdome.
Look, I always said I wanted to be Tina Turner in Thunderdome. Now I get the chance.
I thought that was Grace.
Grace Jones.
Grace
You're
Jones.
Thinking of Conan.
I'm thinking of Conan.
Wow. Can I be your Master Blaster?
Yes. Okay. You can be Master Blaster. Oh, yeah. Who runs by the town? Master Blaster.
But overall, it was definitely a fantastic show. I think we can all agree on that. We would love to hear our listeners' opinion of the show. We would love to get feedback. If you agreed with us, if you disagreed with us, let us know. Go to our Facebook page. Go to Twitter at PCHH. No, I'm just kidding. And let us know. Talk to us about it. We want to hear what you guys had to say, what you guys thought about it. I'm hopeful for Iron Fist. I'm hopeful for the Defenders and to see Misty come back with Luke Cage. Mm-hmm. I'm very excited for where season 2 of Luke Cage would go. Very excited for season 2 of Jessica Jones and where that will go.
Yep.
We will probably not see any of those until after the Defenders, from the way that it's being talked about right now, which is sad. I would like to see more. And considering there is a lot of talk now about Punisher and his own series and possibly even Ghost Rider going to Netflix.
Here we go again.
Which would be interesting. I don't know if they would take the chance on another Ghost Rider movie just yet, but the actor playing Ghost Rider and Ghost Rider in S.H.I.E.L.D. is actually being very well done. So if they were to take it and bring it to Netflix, I'd be interested to see how that goes. With that being said, don't forget you can go to patreon.com/nerdyshow and support this and many other Nerdy Show Network programs.
In fact, you can totally earmark dollars explicitly for us, and we appreciate that. Not that we don't want you to support the network as a whole, but, I mean, come on, guys.
But if you enjoy us,
you love us,
let them know that you want your dollars to come to us as well. You can check us out online, flameonshow.com. Oral. If people are not getting enough oral in their daily life,
you can totally hear me on our sister podcast, which is Drag is the New Spandex.
A.K.A.?
All Queens and Me. I am also... It is All Queens and Me, and you know it is, Brian. You know it is. God damn it. Also, I'm on Stupid Popcast. That's Stupid with two O's. Popcast with a P.
Hey, Joey.
Where I'm with a bisexual and Jess, who might also be bisexual. I don't want to put labels on her because I don't know. Or You can wholly see all of my Westworld and comic book reviews at scifipost.net. Why? Because .nets are still cool.
So with that being said, we thank you guys. This is our last micro of 2016. So I thank you gentlemen for being here with us. I thank Jared and Jeff for a fantastic year of recording. All of our guests that have been with us this year. Stay tuned. Next episode will be a best of, because I love doing those best of episodes, where you'll also get to hear our picks for what gave us life in the year 2016. And hopefully it won't be the not life of some of the biggest.
I'm excited for our new end of the show, which is this some old bullshit.
With that, flame off.
Thanks for listening to Flame On, presented by Nerdy Show. If you like what you heard, please rate and review us on iTunes, like and follow us on SoundCloud and Audioboom, or subscribe and stream on Google Play. Flame On was created by Brian Pittard and is engineered by Pat O'Rourke. As listener-supported entertainment, we rely on you to keep this and other shows on the Nerdy Show Network alive by telling a friend or funding the network via Patreon. Any size contribution gets you exclusive outtakes, episodes, and images from across the network, and there's even more perks available. Just head to patreon.com/nerdyshow. To find out how you or your company can underwrite this or other Nerdy Show programs, visit nerdyshow.com/sponsorships. For more podcasts, articles, community forums, and other awesomeness, visit nerdyshow.com, and be sure to follow Nerdy Show and Flame On all your favorite social networks. Follow us at Flame On Podcast on Twitter, and Flame On Show on Facebook, Tumblr, and all your favorite gay hookup apps. If it's gay and geeky, we've got you covered.